only if the client's confidential information obtained in a prior representation has become generally known. I see that Mia Lorick has logged in on that one.
Yes, Alex. When can a lawyer use confidential information of a former client to the disadvantage of the former client after the representation has concluded?
We'll turn to our ethics guru, Mr. DeBose.
Yes, Mia's exactly right, Alex. She has tapped into Texas Disciplinary Rule of Professional Conduct 105B3. I think a lot of us know that the lawyer can't knowingly use confidential information of a former client to the disadvantage of a former client after the representation has been included. But people may not be aware of the coda at the end of that, which says, unless the confidential information has become generally known. Once it's generally known, you can disclose it whenever you want.
All right. Thank you so much. And so since you won this round, Mia, you can go ahead and collect or select the next category and amount.
Alex, I'm going to go with conflicts of interest for $600.
Let's go ahead and read this. When the previous representation has concluded and the matter in which appellate lawyer has been retained is not substantially related to the matters in which appellate lawyer previously represented a party to which he is now adverse. So, okay, you've punched in, and I see that, Mia, you have were the first one to pinch in on this one.
When is an acceptable time to sue a client over an unpaid fee?
Mr. DeBose is shaking his head. I'm sorry, that's not the correct answer. I see that, Heidi, you've punched in.
Alex, I'm going to go with when is the fact that an appellate lawyer is currently adverse to a previous client, when is that not grounds for disqualification?
And Mr. DeBose, our ethics guru, is nodding his head yes. So let's see what you said as a question there. There it is. And so, Mr. DeBose, tutorial, please.
Well, Alex, this has to do with Rule of Professional Conduct 109A. And it says that a lawyer that has previously represented a client shall not thereafter represent someone else who's adverse to that client, if it is a same or substantially related matter. Now, same or substantially related is not defined under the rules, but a comment under that rule gives us some guidance. It says that this has to do with situations where a lawyer could have acquired confidential information that could be used to that prior client's disadvantage or to the advantage of a current client. Now, it's important to note that this rule is primarily for the protection of clients, and those protections can be waived by them if the matter is fully disclosed. But absent a waiver, if it's a same or substantially related matter, you can't do it.
Okay, we understand that. Thank you so much. And so, Heidi, as the winner, you get to select, make our next selection.
I'll pick gray area for $200, please.
Okay. And let's see. Only if there have been an unreasonable number of previous motions for extension or the length of the requested extension is unreasonable. But I see that, Bill, you've now punched in.
Yes, yes, Alex. The question is, when would it be appropriate to oppose a motion for extension of time in an appeal?
Okay, Mr. DeBose? Yes, nodding the head yes.
First of all, Alex, let me point out that the title of this category, the gray area, has nothing to do with your hair color. It is instead areas in which there is a disparity between the rules of disciplinary conduct and the standards for appellate conduct. The rules don't say anything about opposing motions for extension. However, the standards are very specific about preserving the right to not oppose motions for extension of time. And the lawyer's duties to client, the standards provide that the lawyer reserves the right to grant reasonable accommodations to opposing counsel. It goes beyond that to say that the clients have no right to instruct a lawyer to refuse reasonable requests. And finally, the section of the standards applying to lawyers' duty to lawyers say counsel will not unreasonably withhold consent to a reasonable request for cooperation or scheduling accommodation by opposing counsel. So it, you can't do it if it's a reasonable request. The standards don't say what's reasonable and what's not reasonable. Obviously, if it's a first request for an extension of 30 days, that's almost by definition a reasonable request. If it's the third or fourth extension, or if it's for 180 days, that's clearly unreasonable and you still have a right to object. But if it's a reasonable request, the standards say don't oppose that request.
All right. Thank you so much. And for the record, no umbrage taken at the comment on the color of my hair. At least I'm not suffering a recession, as is Mr. DeBose. All right. So, Bill, you are the winner of this particular round, you can go ahead and select the next category.
Yes, Alex, I like the way you used the word umbrage. That was great. Let me have show me the money for $400.
Show me the money for $400. Okay. Here's the answer. When the fee in its entirety is a reasonable fee to secure the availability of a lawyer's future services and compensate the lawyer for the preclusion of other employment that results from the acceptance of employment for the client.